And we thought, this woman is crazy. And then it just seemed like, oh my God, what a challenge. What a challenge. And yeah, we were up for it, of course.
I'm Joella Folds. You're listening to episode 3 of Heart of a Festival. This is a podcast exploring all the things that make the Celtic Colours International Festival special. Today, we'll have a visit with two amazing Scottish musicians who have a rather extensive connection to Celtic Colours. I dropped in to visit at their home in a lovely little village in Scotland called Pathead.
My name is Karina Hewitt. I am a musician. I play harp and I sing, and I'm a composer and teacher.
My name's David Milligan. I'm a piano player and a composer, and sometimes I'm a jazz musician.
So you have both got a fairly long history with Celtic Colours Festival. Can you just give me a bit of an idea of, when you think about Celtic Colours in Cape Breton, what comes to mind?
The colours, the leaves, the festival club, the camaraderie, the feeling of friendship and connection between not only all the musicians, but all the staff, all the drivers, all the community helpers. That's all of that comes flooding to mind immediately. And of course, the music and the dancing.
Yeah, same for me, really. I think the first thing that I was struck by is the strength of the tradition over there. There's something about how deep-rooted everybody feels about the music. And my first visit, which was quite a long time ago, 98, was it, maybe? 1998? I couldn't believe, you know, as a piano player going over to this place for the first time, the fact that just about everybody seemed to play the piano. you know, there just seemed to be this wide kind of blanket love of what they did and you know, respect and everybody else's playing and just this communal passion, which was just incredible.
So after several trips back and one as artists in residence together, what are your feelings about the festival and how it works as a festival?
Well, it's an incredibly connected festival to the community, much more so than other festivals I've found. I mean, you'll find a lot of festivals we've visited, you go in, the festival is brought in, created, lots and lots of visitors come and then lots of visitors leave. Whereas Celtic Colours tends to be more, it's there for the community first and foremost. Visitors come from, I'm sure, all over the world, but it's mainly for the community. That's overwhelming, actually. It's fabulous.
I think one of the things that separates it from all the other festivals I've been at is that Karina touched on it as well, the sense of community, the fact that all of the artists are driven around the island by volunteers, and there's this incredible team of drivers who are, and they're there as volunteers. Nobody's looking at their watch and complaining about the hours, or and you kind of feel like you're visiting a family rather than visiting a festival.
One of the other things that came to mind there was the fact that when you are traveling, say, you know, across the world to get to this festival, but actually you're just going to be a small part of it because there are so many other people involved. But the main musical content of each show would be Cape Breton music. That is really quite unusual. I mean, you get visiting artists coming to a festival and they're going to be the headline act. But not at the Celtic Colours Festival. You have the actual Cape Breton music is the most important thing, and we are all there to celebrate that, to input into that, to be inspired by that, and to play and create music with all the musicians that are involved, like in the sessions and whatever. Like, it's there, it's a big sharing event, but you're sharing that real culture of Cape Breton, much more so than visiting, say, going to an English festival. And they will have worldwide acts coming in, dropping in, playing their thing and leaving. It's not like that with Celtic Colours at all. So it's so strongly supporting the music from Cape Breton. Do you remember, David, when Kenny Fraser went over to Cape Breton when he was quite young and he came back? Bashui Cafe, this band that we just started at that point, we were playing with Kenny Fraser, the fiddler, and Davy Catnach on percussion. And Kenny came back and he was so inspired. He'd come back with this idea that reels were not to be played as fast as we were playing them in Scotland. Oh no, they were to play, they had to have a real deep rooted connection to the earth. Step dancing, which we'd never heard of before. And he was showing us all these moves and this real four to the floor thing that was going on. The Strathspeys were way faster than we were playing them. We were had this, you know, they needed to have this significance and history behind them, when actually these Strathspeys were kicking when they were faster. So Kenny had brought that back to us when we had just moved to Edinburgh in the like early 90s. Mm.
I don't remember any of this.
Oh, you lie. You lie. So there was, and Hamish Moore had gone over, and there was Mary Campbell. She was, so there were these connections that had started before Celtic Colours had started as a festival, which were seeping into our musical society without us really knowing. And there were visitors coming over from Cape Breton. Like, my mum was running Balnean House at that point. This is like 94, I suppose. We had people coming over to teach step dancing. Harvey Beaton. I went on a week-long Harvey Beaton step dancing course and loved it. So there were collaborations happening before we even knew it.
Sin on its bonny gowan backs, I wooed thee for my bride. My ain dear love, say sweet and young, say artless and say fair. When love was all the grief we kept, and you my only care. Time wears away, time wears away, and when I let us be, it stole the wild rose fray my cheek, and the blight blank frayer eve, when woods were green.
What is it that makes a festival really a good festival? If you come back from some place and you say, that was a good festival, that was a really great festival, do you know what the elements might be that would make the difference?
It's hard to say. I think there's a difference when you're an artist to being a punter, or you know, somebody who's attending concerts. And I'm sorry to say I don't have much experience as a punter. So from the point of view of an artist, one of the things that you look for or that you certainly take away from a festival is the thought that goes into how people are put together, how artists are put together, whether it's on the same bill as them or whether you're sharing a space with them or if you're asked to produce something musically with them. So, you know, being put together with a possible collaborator. And I think, you know, once you start to get a sense of a festival director's mind in a way, in terms of they think, I think this and this will go really well together, or I don't know, but I want to see what happens when we try. I think that's what is inspiring. And that's what I hope to find in other festivals, is not just an artistic director who's looking to fill seats and make some money, but they want to create some kind of statement.
I think that that adventurous streak within a festival organizer is really wonderful for the artists, because you do get taken to places that you, on stages or with other musicians, you would never think that you would be working with. So that's really exciting as an artist. Also, what makes a festival great is when you come away from a festival and you feel like you have a connection, you still have a connection with that festival. You have made friends and you feel good about what you have achieved as an artist. So you get a bit of feedback, which really helps. So those things are great. You and that you are looked after, that's a really big deal. To have somewhere nice to stay, somewhere safe, somewhere to hang out with other musicians in a safe place, plus the opportunity to have sessions on a club stage or not, all those things make a festival great. From a punter's point of view, you have to keep the music as high class as possible so that every punter feels that they buy a ticket, and even if they don't know who's on that ticket, they don't know who's going to be on that stage that night, they know for sure they're going to have a brilliant night, because as we know, Celtic Colours consistently delivers a wonderful high class, you know, A-plus festival. You get an amazing show, whatever's on that stage, even if you'd never heard of them before, you will always get a high class event. So punters need to know that. They want to have that trust in the organisers. And that takes time. That takes time and lots of feedback and connection and communication with punters, and also communication with artists. Yeah. And then other festival organisers. So I think as long as communication is happening on all these different levels, then the festival will be great.
This is The Unusual Suspects, created and directed by David Milligan and Karina Hewitt in Scotland.
David and myself met in college. It was both studying jazz degrees, and David had always wanted some kind of big band, and I had always wanted some kind of trad, traditional music type big event, but it was in the back of my mind. I was never thinking on it as a real thing. We could never afford to make anything like that happen. But we'd kind of had chats about it very informally over the years. I always thought in the end that David would run his own jazz big band. That's what I thought he would end up doing. Anyway, Colin Hind, who was the director of the Celtic Connections Festival, 1 year offered David and I the main stage of the Glasgow Royal Concert Hall to do what we wanted. He had a space to fill in a Sunday afternoon that was just dead time on that stage. And so we put to him the fact that we would like to do some kind of big band. And then it took many months of David and I trying to work out exactly what we would do together, because I didn't want a jazz big band, but I did want that kind of sound, but I wanted it to be traditional in some sense. So,
It was also partly a reaction to, I think, kind of a few years before then, there'd been quite a lot of large-scale performances. Musicians were being commissioned to write music. And this was a relatively new thing at that point. And there was, you know, traditional musicians were being asked to write a piece of music, and they would get an orchestra involved, and they would get traditional musicians involved, and they would get a classical composer to write something for traditional musicians. And, you know, there's been some great pieces of music created and some great performances. But the one thing that really struck me more than anything was that everybody always looked really uncomfortable. So you would get traditional musicians being asked to play something that was kind of alien to them. And the same for the classical musicians. They were having to play music that just wasn't familiar to them. And so there was always something just a little bit uncomfortable about it. And we'd, you know, through talking about this idea of having a big band and, you know, putting lots of, I mean, that in itself is not an original idea. You know, there's, we can't take credit for putting lots of musicians together. But the idea of getting that amount of people on a stage, but getting them to do what they do very well already, what comes naturally to them, and not to put them, well, I was going to say not to put them out of their comfort zone, but it kind of, in a way it does, because it's a different environment for them, but we're asking them to play music that they do naturally. And, you know, anybody who's involved in traditional music or loves traditional music will be familiar with the sound of massed instruments and sessions, all just, you know, and there's rarely a more joyous noise that you will hear. So it was trying to capture the essence of that session, and people actually just playing for fun and having a great time, but also trying to frame it in the context of organized big band music, and, you know, to bring a little bit of structure to it. And so we brought in some jazz musicians to play some brass, and we had, you know, drums and a little bit more, you know, shall we say, less traditional elements to it, but keeping that the tradition at its core.
It was also really important to let all the traditional musicians who, I mean, we got the people who were the top of their fields to come and play with us. And we didn't ask them to change their regional styles. We didn't ask them to change their ornamentation, their bowing, the fiddlers. We wanted them to play exactly the way they played and let that kind of organized session idea happen, but without forcing them to I suppose, change in a classical way and all bow in the same way and all, you know, all do exactly the same grace notes here and there. We didn't want that. And so letting them do their own thing gave them this sense of kind of ownership over it. And so they learned their tunes. They didn't need to read music because they could just learn the tunes and learn the wee bridging sections in between. So it became a loads more fun than exactly than playing in these large classically organized pieces, which David and I had both been kind of involved in, but in a musician setting rather than a composer's own, although we did do the New Voices pieces, didn't we? But even then, the New Voices commissions, which are for new music, new composers, that started in 1998, and David and I were the first, one of the first two to do them. It was fun to let trad players play in their own way, but in a big band setting. So that's where it all kind of started.
I was fortunate enough to be there to see the first Unusual Suspects in 2003, and it was probably one of the most exciting things I've ever attended. And I could not get out of my mind the idea that we could do something that was international, that was like that. So I posed the idea to the two of you. What did that feel like when you heard that?
And we thought, this woman is crazy. And then it just seemed like, oh my God, what a challenge. What a challenge. And yeah, we were up for it, of course. we had no idea how it was going to work, and we had to do a lot of learning, and it was a big learning curve for both of us. But you were up for it, so were we.
What about you, David? Was it scary?
Oh, go on, admit it.
Okay, if you want me to say yes, I'll say yes. I think by the time we came and did it at Celtic Colours, we already had, I don't know if formula is the right word, but we had an idea of how to make those things work. And there were enough familiar elements. I mean, the musicians, some of the musicians came over from Scotland, so, you know, there were the elements that had already been involved in the project. And the challenge was when we had to start collaborating with somebody else. And obviously we were working with Gordy Sampson as the kind of the third director of the band. And that very quickly became quite easy. I think that was the scary part, that, you know, having to consider having another voice and, you know, somebody else going, I think we should do it this way. But of course, Gordy was so easy to work with, and it just became very natural. And the song elements changed somewhat, because Karina had always taken care of the songs when we did the Scottish version. And so we were working with some of Gordy's songs. And of course, one of the things that wasn't really very surprising was everybody was just so lovely that it just kind of became really easy to do. And there was an immediate sense of community within the band, which just never really felt too difficult, because everybody was on the same side and trying to make it work.
We realized that we had some real strong characters in Cape Breton. In fact, every single musician in Cape Breton was a strong character, and they had something to give musically, personally. So even when we'd organized the music as such and we came over to Cape Breton, they were inputting more once we'd met them, and we realized how deeply they felt about their music. Like, I can't remember the name of one of the tunes. But we'd, like, tune, say, a two-part reel. We've had this two-part reel in Scotland for hundreds of years. But actually, it's not got two parts. It's got, like, 14 parts. And they know them all. So we were learning a lot about our own music, our own Scottish music that had travelled over. We were being shown this whole new way of playing these tunes, which we hadn't really heard before. So that was exceptional, actually. And I hold that memory really dear. So, yeah, the whole thing is a massive learning curve every time we do it. We thought we had a plan, and we kind of had a plan, but we're adaptable, and it changed, and it became what it was. So
it became what it was. We actually did it three times, because we did it. We brought it over to Scotland the next year in 2005, and then we came back and we did it for our 10th anniversary in 2006. And there were minor changes, of course, both the content and the personnel. But did it get easier as you went on?
I think so. I think so. I mean, for me, it never really felt difficult. There was challenges. But, you know, for all the reasons that I said a while ago, it when everybody has a shared goal, and I think, you know, that's the secret to any band, whether it's a large band or a duo, you know, all the musicians involved need to have the same goal. They need to want the same thing. And everybody just seemed to get on board so quickly. So the more times we did it, all that happened that was, people just started giving a little bit more to it, because they felt an affinity with it, and they felt a little bit more ownership of it, I guess. And so I think the performances got stronger each time. So.
Yeah.
So this is The Unusual Suspects of Celtic Colours.
Can I ask you a question? What do you think was the very initial reaction for the first time we did it for your audience? Do you think it took them a while?
No, I actually don't think it took them a while. I think after two numbers, they went, "Oh my God." And the audience, like, we didn't expect to sell out that first year, and we did, both shows. Mm-hmm. The first one was a little slower because people didn't understand the concept, and people sometimes don't read concepts. Mm. You know, they just look for names, right? I was just blown away by how they responded and how they then took it on, wanted to go to the next time, and sold out both the next time we did it as well. And I think they felt a sense of pride with the people that were on stage with these international people, and they can hold their own together with these international people. I think that was a great sense of pride. I don't know whether you could sense that from the performer point of view.
From the performer point of view, yes, definitely. There was a huge sense of pride, and yes, they started to take ownership of this thing that they didn't really understand when we first started either. So that's what I noticed through the three times we performed. The artists really, really loved what they were involved in, even if they found it confusing to start with. But I don't really know how the audience felt, because we were on the Unusual Suspects of Celtic Colours high, as you are, you know, and you're just on this juggernaut that keeps going and going until it's done, and you go, "Oh, I hope everybody liked it." But Gordy's reaction was really lovely as well, because when we first started working with Gordy, he wasn't really sure what was going on either, you know. This wasn't something he was used to. So,
I think that probably the thing that was most telling was when we went back to the musicians and said, "Would you like to do this again?" And everybody, to a person, said, "Yes, absolutely." And some said, "Are you kidding? Of course. When can you learn so many new tunes with so many great people?" And so they definitely wanted to do it and felt they got a lot out of it.
Well, you asked David whether it was as difficult doing it the second or third time? I actually thought it was. It always is, because I get incredibly emotionally involved in it. And I do try not to be. I try and be more objective about the whole thing, but I am emotionally involved in it. It takes up a huge amount of my energy and my heart. I can't help that, and I'm now starting to learn that actually that's okay. It's okay to be like that. So I do find it incredibly difficult, but the joy of going through that process and then how we all feel afterwards and what we've achieved makes it all really worthwhile.
You've been listening to Heart of a Festival, my visit with Karina Hewitt and David Milligan in Scotland. Please take a second to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast in the iTunes Music Store. It really makes a big difference. We'll be back in 2 weeks with an episode you won't want to miss.
Okay, what's this all
throw
about?
Throw you in the deep end,
oh,
girl.
Majorly. And I knew what Celtic Colours was about, but to see it from the other side is another experience altogether.
I'm Joella Folds. This podcast is brought to you by the Celtic Colours International Festival and is produced by Jamie Folds for Sound Park Media. For detailed credits, including the music used in this episode, check out the show notes at celtic-colors.com/podcast.